Hello, all of you out there in Radioland. This is KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. And for our virtual listeners, we hope your computer is locked onto our website, kptz.org. Our website's more than a way to listen to today's show. For example, you can find the biographies of all of our hosts and DJs. You can look up calendar listings to see what's happening around town. And you can even sample some of our earlier shows. In fact, much of the original programming on KPTZ is currently available as a podcast. You know, double your listening pleasure. Listen to today's show as well as some earlier ones. I'm Marianne McNellis. This show is called Our Town. Have you ever wondered who the people are that you see every day around the area? For example, who were all of those people at Taps at the Guardhouse the other night? Some of them were enthusiastically singing along as they munched their chicken wings and sipped craft beer or wine. It looked like a class reunion from sometime in the 70s or maybe the 60s. And who was that lady in Victorian garb riding her bike near the post office the other day? It wasn't the more famous Victorian lady with the tight corset and the ramrod straight spine. This one wasn't quite as finely attired. I spotted what looked like Nike running shoes on her feet. I'm sure the ladies of the 1800s wore Nikes when they peddled around uptown. The downtown ladies, well, they had to wear high heels, as befitting their profession. Jefferson County is full of all sorts of fascinating characters. This show, Our Town, tries to profile a few of the singular personalities who live here. But the show's only a half hour long, which is definitely not long enough to do justice to some of our fellow citizens. So it's a synopsis. We try to get guests to talk about their lives, their dreams, and how they ended up on the western edge of the continent, able to look across the Strait of Juan de Fuca, right at Vancouver Island, Canada. Over time, we'll be talking with firefighters and foodies, bus drivers and baristas, lawyers and ladies who lunch. We try to find out what makes them tick and what they think about living in beautiful Jefferson County amid the deer, the otter, and even the magnificent soaring eagles. Today, my guest is Caroline Culbertson, who's enjoyed several different careers over the years, but perhaps her best loved careers were her years as an actress and an artist. So welcome to the show, Caroline.
Hello there.
You've done so many different things over the years, it's hard to know how to cover even a fraction of it. But let's start at the beginning. Did you grow up in the state of Washington here in Jefferson County?
No, I didn't. I was born in Chicago. I was delivered by my grandfather at the Russell Memorial Hospital. He was an obstetrician, and the only thing that really bothered me was on my birth certificate, somehow he wanted a son so badly that the gender that I was assigned was not female, but male.
Hmm.
So it wasn't until I was getting ready to go abroad and I had to have a passport with the correct information on it. My father had to go downtown and officially change me from a male to a female.
So you went to school then in the Chicago area?
Mostly in the suburbs to the north, outlying communities adjacent to Chicago.
High school can be a very formative time for many people. By the time you got to high school, did you have any idea what you wanted to do with your life? Or were you just sort of drifting around?
I was cueing my father when I was 9 years old for a show in our local community theater, which had professional people working with us. My grandmother also was influential in that she graduated from Northwestern in 1898.
Wow, she must have been one of the really early female pioneers.
She was, because in those days, you did not, well, let's just say nice ladies did not go on the stage. So they had to do things to get around that. Her degree indicated that she had graduated from the School of Speech. Mm-hmm. She did help found Zeta Phi Eta, which was the first female fraternity for women.
Wow.
I thought that was kind of cool. So, I belong to the Beta chapter.
So she did some acting. Your father was an actor. Was he full-time an actor, or was it more of a hobby for him?
Well, I think it was more of a release. So somebody said, hey, Jack, you know, you're really good. And since my grandmother had been doing what they called conference work, because she couldn't go on the stage, she was married to a physician, and that just was not appropriate in those days.
It wasn't done.
She did what they called conference work. She would get up and do a monologue, but she would take the voices of all the different characters in a particular chapter and do a book review that way. She was very good. She could assume different voices. And when I was about 5 or 6, she would read me Shakespeare, and I couldn't understand what all the words were. But I sensed the love in her voice.
So it sounds like you were sort of smitten with the stage from a young age.
I think I was just surrounded by it.
Uh-huh.
It turned out that I had some talent, which helped.
So when you graduated from high school, did you study acting?
Yes. First, I went to the University of Denver. And I studied under, the head of the department was Campton Bell, who was head of the National Children's Theater Association, and they emphasized children's theater. So while I was at DU, I did a lot of children's shows. We had bookings through Sterling's Theater. We toured around the state of Colorado.
Well, wait a minute. It seems to me you told me that the real reason you went to school in Denver had something to do with the boy.
Oh, shucks. I was going to try to avoid that personal issue.
Oh, well, we don't need any detail, but it was young love, right?
Oh, it was my first love, yes. And I was very faithful to him for about 7 years. But I was a very good student, but he was not such a good scholar. And the only place that he could get into, it turned out, was the University of, you guessed it, Denver. So it turned out they had a wonderful faculty. There was an emphasis on the children's theater.
So we
toured just like a regular touring company, and I got credit for it.
Then at some point you transferred to UW, right?
Yes, because Helen Bonfils, who was a wealthy woman and a patron of the arts in Denver, created the first theater in the round in the open air. She built a sort of amphitheater, so they did summer shows in the round. And I liked the challenge of acting with your back, you know, all sides of you were, and it was great. I mean, I enjoyed doing that because I was used to proscenium stage where you're like in a box and the audience is looking into the box on the open side.
So when you were almost done with school, you had to, I guess, start thinking about how you were going to make a living. What was your decision path? What did you do when you graduated?
I did do local stock company. There was a local stock company in Seattle, and I did work with them, but they didn't pay worth a darn.
Yeah, that's
and
a
I
problem.
Couldn't make a living from it. So I went to work at Boeing.
Uh-huh.
And there was a local station just like this one called KISW FM on the outskirts of town. And so I would do kind of a 3-ring circus existence going from Boeing in a carpool to the station, and then from the station I would go either to rehearsal or to a performance at the local stock company.
Well, wait a minute. What did you actually do at Boeing? What were you doing?
I was a gopher for a bunch of engineers on the B-52 fuel cell quality control that was between 54 and 59. So it was after the war, but they were still doing studies on it.
All I did was I
was the gopher for them. But I invented a filing system because they had a total hopeless mess, these engineers, with what they were working from. And so I got an award for that.
Well, so it's sort of like two different worlds, three really. So you were there at Boeing, and you were doing a radio show,
right.
And you were also performing.
That's right.
A lot of stamina there.
I did have a lot of energy, which I think I still sustain to quite a degree. At 88, I'm still pretty clear voiced. I mean, I don't sound like that little old lady down the street.
So you mentioned you did that until 1959.
Yes.
And what changed then? What did you do next?
I auditioned for a job by Transatlantic Telephone to Stuttgart. on the recommendation of a friend of mine who was had been in special services in the 7th Army. E-Ray Scott was the director, and so I talked with him and did something, and he said, "You're hired." So I was on a boat, a student ship, they call them, where professors and students went on exchange programs to Europe. I left from New York with a couple who could get block seats because they had a travel agency. They were friends, and they also elected me to be on King Television as Miss University District for the first University District Fair in Seattle. So that was fun.
Yeah, it sounds like fun.
The itinerary that I got from the 7th Army about when they were going to start, I had timed perfectly with the transatlantic crossing, which took about 3 days. But when I got to our first stop in Europe, which was part of a tour that I was on that I would take until ready to go down and join up with a repertory company in Stuttgart, the ETO, European Theater of Operations, decided while I was in the middle of the Atlantic to speed all entertainment schedules up to 2 months earlier. I did not get this message because I was in the middle of the ocean.
So what did you do when you got there?
I called up from London because I hadn't heard from them.
Right.
And they were supposed to contact me. So I called them and they said, oh, just gave me the sad news. And I said, what are you, here I came all the way over here. And they were really, E-Ray Scott, the director, was just terribly upset about it. And he said, look, come ahead anyway, and I'll see if I can't get you another position through special services.
Right.
So I did that. I went down to Stuttgart after going through England and Wales. So I went down there and met with Scott. He thought I was great, but he wanted, you know, because he then did a regular audition. And he said, you know, you're very good. We'd love to have you. Because they ordinarily got their English-speaking actresses to act as actors from England.
Right.
Because they're closer, obviously.
Yeah, easier. So did you actually perform over there?
No. The woman that was supposed to show up didn't. Then I came, and I was going to be doing it. Then she evidently was able to come back. Her boyfriend was in the special services unit. He wanted her. They said they were really sorry. Scott said, well, look, I'll get you something. I can get you a position over in Eastern Germany as a director for musicals. Well, this was not my forte. I was a theater major and, you know, did legitimate stage acting. And what did I know from...
So did you do it or not?
I was going to be with 18,000 soldiers on this base, isolated, with no one to help me. And you would have thought that would have been real funny and challenging. But 18,000 soldiers on a base where I didn't know what I was doing, directing musical comedies was a little bit too much for me. So I said, I'm sorry, I can't handle that. He said, well, look, I'll just keep looking for you. I then continued down into Italy with a German family that I had gotten lodgings with. I went with a daughter, and we delivered travel brochures to various towns in the northern half of Italy. In those days, there wasn't enough gasoline going around in post-war Europe. You could get gasoline coupons from your AA, AAA agency, the local one in any town, so they were worth money, so you could exchange them. Turns out that this German family were running kind of a, not exactly a smuggling operation, but they were
juggling operation
with these gasoline coupons, which they would get their quota from at the local AA station. Then they would go to a gasoline station. And all Italy was in on this. They all participated because it benefited everybody. So then Louisa, my German girlfriend, who was trying to learn English, so I never got to learn Italian, which was annoying. But anyway, she would bargain with the gasoline station owner, and then he would give her money for these these petrol stamps.
You're listening to KPTZ Port Townsend 91.9 FM on the radio dial. If you're online, we're at kptz.org. The show is called Our Town, and I'm your host, Marianne McNellis. We're devoted to profiling some of the wonderful and sometimes weird people who live and work on the Olympic Peninsula. Today, my guest is Caroline Culbertson. At this point in her life, she's mainly known around here for wildlife art, but as you are learning, she was an actress. Now, right now, she was just telling me how she basically got mired in Europe during the post-war years, but I know that she ended up in New York City. So tell me what you were doing in New York. That's a pretty exciting place to be when you're a young actress.
Well, I decided that it was time to let the Big Apple know I had arrived, but I also was very practical about getting any kind of work before I hit the big starring roles. And I was happy with children's theater. Also, I was in a musical, not my cup of tea, but this one I could manage. I met a wonderful woman who was in my theatrical boarding house over on the east side of New York. Marie introduced me to a repertory company that was situated near the small town of Libertyville, and there were 28 acting repertory companies housed in this great big old spooky mansion that had tons of rooms and odd passages. At first, it was very, I don't know if I can handle this sort of feeling, but then I got very comfortable. We would be rotated out as bookings came in for a company. We would do mostly contemporary shows. I remember doing Witness for the Prosecution, playing this Scottish lady. So anyway, we would go down all the way along the New England coast and then over as far as Savannah, Georgia.
Like many young actors, you had to make ends meet. And I know for a while you worked in what sounded like a really cool coffee house.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Tell me about that.
Oh, it was wonderful. It was on 59th Street, right opposite Central Park. It appealed to the carriage trade, as it was called, from Lincoln Center. Our owner was a slightly mad psychologist who could invent the most incredible recipes. Things like cantaloupe and honeydew melon and watermelon, and whisk it all up in a blender with shaved ice. And it was the greatest hangover drink you ever had in your life. He invented something called croûte de fromage, which is simply a slice of bread dipped in egg and wine. And then it was put on a hot grill and it would puff up. It was a wonderful treat called a businessman's lunch. And a lot of the local small businesses in the area would come in there for that businessman's lunch. It was delicious. And we had Lola, who made the best salads I ever tasted in my entire life. The only problem was that to release stress, because she was under a lot of it with a lot of orders, she would go on a kind of a bender. But she'd always show up for work. She would make the salads and they would all turn out beautifully. But she'd go into a crying jag and weep buckets into the salad. So
and that doesn't sound good.
Well, no, it actually was okay. I mean, a little salt is
so
okay.
Why did you decide to leave New York?
There was a crime wave.
Yeah.
I had been doing well. I was a member of Actors Equity. I went to an acting studio for professionals where you keep up with your acting skills. You brush them up like a dancer has to keep their muscles in tone, whether they're dancing every day or not. I had that experience with Herbert Berghoff and Uta Hagen, who ran it, who were stars in their day. I got in touch with other professional actors, and we could do shows together.
But you decided to come back to Washington State at some point.
Yes, well, there was this crime wave, as I mentioned, and I was attacked and mugged.
Terrible.
It was, because he grabbed me from behind and held a butcher knife at my stomach.
Oh, God, that's terrible.
I said, well, I don't want to die right now.
Yeah.
So I played dead, and I became like a little dead bunny rabbit. I just went limp, Then when he slightly loosened his grip, I broke fast out of his grip. Wow. I startled him and got away, but he had my satchel basket that had my purse in it. I got so angry at the fact that, oh, no, before that, he had this butcher knife. He rushed me with a butcher knife, and he was gonna stab me in the stomach with it. Wow. So I put my hand out to stop it, and he twisted the knife, which wasn't, oh, God, was not, he was the worst villain. But at any rate, I started screaming like an express train, hoping to attract students from Columbia who were playing down the slope from me at the tennis courts, but they couldn't hear me. And he just grabbed, at that point, he was alerted to the fact that probably somebody was eventually going to come. And I think he saw students coming down from Columbia out at this path that, or walkway that went down right next to the iron railing that I had been close to when I had been attacked. I was trying to climb over the railing to go after him, and my hair was hanging down on one side of my face. I had blood running down my hand, which had been slashed open. I was a sight for sore eyes. And anyway, these two people who were students going down to Columbia to do tennis, they stopped when they saw this apparition trying to climb over the fence, and I was saying, go after them, go after them. They've got my money. I was so mad. And so one of them half-heartedly went loping down where I pointed, the upper level of Riverside Drive Park, where there were these paved little mini roads. But his partner kept looking nervously around at the bushes that were around us on either side of the path. And he said, you don't think they're hiding in there, do you? And that was
enough. So you came back to Seattle, and what did you do then?
I had a boyfriend who deceived me rather thoroughly. We were going to get married and come out to California so I could at least come back to the West Coast because of the crime. I said, I'm not raising kids here. Then he turned out to be married to a Catholic. And
that's not good. Married boyfriend?
Well, I was very
naive,
devastated. Yeah, in some ways, I was very naive.
Okay, you know, Caroline, we're running really short on time now. I'd really like to find out how you ended up back in the Pacific Northwest.
Well, because I found out that I had actually been successful. I had an agent. I was working all the time. I was a member of Actors Equity. So it was like I was tired of racing up the hill to get at the top. I felt I had validated. I had proved to myself I could make it in New York. I could have an agent and get work all the time. I was working in Statistics and Equity magazine stated that only 13% of equity actors were working all the time. And so pretty much I was. When I wasn't working, I was at the coffee mill, which was this marvelous coffee shop.
Right. And after this double traumatic thing of being mugged and being deceived by the guy you were engaged to, it was time to do something else.
And I wanted to go back to where I had been happy in the Pacific Northwest and put my back against the mountains and my toes in the sea.
Right. And so did you go back to doing radio in Seattle?
I didn't, because I kind of felt like that was something
I'd already done that,
been there. I did get an offer from the local stock company to come back, and I had worked with really top professionals.
Okay, so when did you get into doing art?
Well, I'd done that all my life.
I see.
My mother was encouraging me when I was just a little kid because she drew, and she was quite a good artist. But she was a little timid. She wasn't willing to break boundaries, think outside the artistic box. But she did teach me one thing that she had learned in college from her German professor when he would go around to all these young ladies, and he had a very heavy German accent. He would despair of all these fluffy-headed college girls, but he tried to work with them to get them to draw using memory retention for fast sketches. Well, so anyway, finally he got to my mother and she said, what are you talking about? What is it that's so important about art? And he said, Luke, Luke. And he kept saying that to all the girls. And she finally figured out that what he was saying was, look at the things around you. Really see them. If you see an apple, you would say it's red, but it's not. When the light hits it on one side, it's maybe yellowish orange. And it's maybe got tones of lavender on the other side where it's in shadow.
Well, so you ultimately became interested in being a wildlife artist, and you do quite a bit of that now, is that right?
Yes, and I try to emphasize indigenous to this area so that people can look at something that I've done and say, oh my gosh, I know what, now I know what the name of that is. You know, if they see cormorant sitting on pier pilings or...
So some of your art has been showing at the hospital, I know.
Yes, I have three up there due to Michael D'Alessandro, who is the art director of North Winds. Bless his heart, he's a great guy. And he likes my work. I've got up a lynx family of mergansers, which are a very showy black and white diving duck, and seahorses. Did you know we have seahorses here? Well, we do.
Are there any other places around town that people can currently view your art?
Computer building.
Okay.
I've got hummingbirds there.
Oh, cool.
And they're pretty trippy, good guys. Yeah. I think there's still one at Spice Tea Gallery down on Water Street. Then wall art, of course, at the Jefferson County Hospital. And there's three of my things up there, just off of the emergency and the radiology room.
Okay. Well, Carolyn, it's hard to believe, but we're basically out of time here. I want to thank you for being a guest on the show. You have many, many fascinating stories, and we've barely been able to touch them because you've led a fabulously interesting and complex life. Thank you so much for being a guest on Our Town.
Thank you. It was my pleasure and a delight to be on Our Town with Marianne. Thank you again.
I also want to thank John McPherson, my partner. He's the man in the glass booth, the editor and producer of Our Town. He edits the show, so he takes out our stumbles and mumbles and grunts and the things we say wrong. We end up sounding so much nicer than we perhaps sound first take. I also want to thank you, the listener. KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend, is a community radio station. That means all of us here at the station are volunteers. We give our time to the community station because we all believe Jefferson County needs a free local voice. We need your support, listeners. Some of you may have heard about our current capital campaign. We're planning on moving from our present quarters in the parking lot of Mountain View Campus to Fort Warden. We're going to be renovating one of the old buildings there. We hope to transform that space into a modern radio station. We even plan on having soundproof studios there, which would be great. Those of you who have visited us here at the current location know we're in an old trailer that was once a classroom at Mountain View. It's old, it's cold, it's not really adequate for what we're trying to do. So now's the time to donate, folks. Give us a call or write a check to the KPTZ Capital Campaign. We have a wonderful grant that's going to match your donation 2-to-1. That means if you donate $100 to the station, we'll actually get $300. Of course, if you donate $1,000, we'll get $3,000. Thank you for helping. You've been listening to Our Town on KPTZ, Port Townsend, 91.9 FM. I'm the host, Marianne McNellis. Thank you so much for listening. We're signing off now, but keep listening to KPTZ for more dynamic, eclectic community radio.
Our Town is an original KPTZ production created by Marianne McNellis and engineered by John McPherson.